This is Ozarks at Large. Before there were Tyson selling poultry in Northwest Arkansas, before Walton's reimagined retail, before Neil's sold pies in Springdale or George's Majestic Lounge had cold beer on Dixon Street, there were Gibson baskets. Christopher Columbus Lum Gibson began making baskets more than 120 years ago. He taught his son George. George taught his son Don. And Don's son Terry is making baskets the family way still.
My two cousins that know how to make baskets know how. We all grew up together, and we all the basket shop was in my backyard when I was a child. And my grandpa made baskets there, my uncles, my dad. So, you know, we just all grew up in it.
The Gibson baskets have achieved their own kind of fame here and far beyond. The baskets have been featured more than once in Southern Living, have been displayed at the Smithsonian, and were used by then-Governor Bill Clinton as gifts to his fellow governors during a governor's conference in Little Rock. They're always made by hand in the style Lum was using back in the 19th century. Terry Gibson makes thousands annually at his place west of Fayetteville along Weddington Drive. This week, with a warm fire crackling inside and his roosters crowing outside, he explained how a white oak tree can become a basket.
And you split the tree, you keep splitting it down as many times as you can until you get a pretty thin board.
Before the trees can be split, the bark has to be stripped clean. Terry follows the same procedure for this process that the three generations before him used.
Exactly. This is exactly the same method. Growing up as a kid, I remember big piles of this bark all laying all around.
He concedes there has been one change since the 1880s. Terry uses a chainsaw to fell the oak trees he uses. The crosscut saw of old has been retired. But there are plenty of other tools at Terry's disposal that have been used for a very long time. Take, for example, the fro he uses to split logs into smaller logs.
It's an old-timey tool, and this particular one here was plowed up in a field and handed down to me, so this is probably 100 years old.
The fro is a heavy, tapered chunk of metal sitting inside a wooden handle. He places the tool inside the wood and smacks the metal with another piece of wood. After just a couple of firm taps, the log divides into smaller, even pieces.
I always try to split it right down the middle.
Then he splits the smaller log again, then again reducing the wood into smaller slivers that can be taken into the same shop he's been using for more than 24 years.
This is called a split bench. This is it's like a wooden vise is what it is. And put your board, this is called a shaving horse. And what I'll do is I'll take this.
This is a long blade with handles on either side that he takes in his hands as he sits on a bench-like contraption.
This original part of this I made when I was 17. This has been replaced because you whittle on it, but this is pretty old.
Terry rakes the long blade across the top of the smaller wood piece he's brought in from outside. Over and over, he shaves the wood into a streamlined strip, the white oak bending slightly each time the blade cruises over the bark.
Now, I know you've been doing this for more than four decades, but I get a little nervous seeing that blade get that close to your stomach.
Well, you just don't think about it.
Okay, sorry I brought it up.
I have cut myself before, mostly on my fingers. I never have cut my stomach, but...
When he was a boy, Terry could earn a nickel for each strip of wood he trimmed for his grandfather. His grandfather, by the way, made baskets until he was 89, so Terry made quite a few nickels.
And I could work for my uncle, my dad, my grandpa, you know.
Right.
And I just picked up the little bits of it here and there, and then all of a sudden, by the time I was 12 years old, I was doing everything.
Next, the wood is tightly secured into a sort of vise called a split bench that Terry's used for more than a quarter century. Holding his knife sideways, he peels the outer band off of the wood. Each of these steps narrows the wood so it can eventually be woven into a basket. The Gibson family tradition has about 50 varieties of baskets, different sizes and shapes. Each has its own name, picked by Terry's great-grandfather. The basket called the large round egg basket was big and was used for carrying round eggs. The two-pie basket could carry two homemade pies. These particular strips are just the right size for a pie basket. Terry takes them back inside the house. There, Terry's wife, Connie, she also makes baskets, holds a block of wood that will serve temporarily as the base of the basket in progress. The strips will be placed on top of the block, and then other strips will be interlaced over and beneath, creating a signature pattern that will make the basket strong enough to carry whatever can be fit inside. Connie says the weaving process is one reason some Gibson baskets have lasted longer than a century.
No nails in our baskets, but all our baskets have nail holes in them because that's how you hold it together.
For each of the 50 or so types of Gibson basket, there is a separate block to put under the wood to begin the weaving process. Each basket then slowly comes to life as Terry or Connie gently lace the wooden slices in, over, and underneath each other.
You have to split an upright piece like this. That makes your over and under weave work out.
So you're weaving a spiral all the way up. If you don't split that, it's like a Missouri basket. And a Missouri basket has one weave around and it stops. And you weave one around and stop. This gives you a continuous weave all the way around.
While the Gibsons create thousands of baskets every year to be sold at farmers markets in Bentonville and Fayetteville, some are sold at retail places like the Ozark Folk Center in Mountain View, and a very few stay in the Gibson home. The last basket Terry's father ever made is above the fireplace, and hanging nearby are a few other baskets Connie says are too special to let go.
That was our first son's basket, and he slept in that while he was young. This one here was Terry's first one that he made a swivel handle one, and that's where the handle sways back and forth, and that was our picnic basket. This one here is our daughter Sarah's Girl Scout basket, and I was the Girl Scout leader for the Girl Scouts of the Brownies, and every time I took that basket to the meeting, every time, and the girls was always, "What's in the basket? What's in the basket?" So that was very special. And this one here was my first basket that I made that's called a wood basket. And that's where the sides are a lot lower. The ends are a lot lower than the sides. Nowadays we're calling that a flower basket because a lot of people do cut flowers. And used to, they put that by the fireplace and put their kindling in it.
There's another basket near their living room, one pulled out of a barn and estimated to be at least 80 years old. The color has warmed to a chestnut brown, but otherwise it looks like it could be one Terry is making this afternoon. Terry says he comes in contact with people, or they seek him out, who have had a Gibson basket for decades, maybe even longer, handed down from parents or grandparents. And he says should any of those baskets made by his family need a repair, he knows precisely how to fix them.
And I do have people that's bought baskets from our relatives and stuff that's very old baskets. And sometimes the binding will be broke or their dog might have chewed on it or something. And I repair a lot of old baskets. And I hear a lot of stories like my mother bought me this basket when I was in high school or I've had it 50 years. And, you know, it's kind of cool to repair those old baskets that, my could have been my grandpa, could have been my great-grandpa, could have been, any one of the family.
Right. Their fingerprints literally on that basket.
Through the years, they never signed their names on them. Here in the last 10 or 15 years, I've started signing all my baskets because people started telling me they wanted it signed. So.
Since every one of those Gibson baskets is made by hand, and all of them these days at this home and workshop, demand is always ahead of supply. Terry and Connie don't take many vacations, and they say rare is the 2 or 3 day period where they're not weaving or cutting or finishing baskets.
What we usually try to do is I'll cut enough of these pieces to make 5 or 6 baskets at a time.
You can find out more about the multi-generational business at their website, GibsonBaskets.com.
Well, here's an impossible question to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How many Gibson baskets have been made?
Oh, my gosh. There's no way. I used to try to keep up with it. There's no way.
I would say at least 100,000, and that's just a ballpark, probably low estimate.
This is Ozarks at Large.
Later today on This American Life, when Adam was a kid, Christmas was magical. In his family's house, he and his siblings could hear but never see Jekko the Elf. They met a mysterious Christmassy figure named Klaus Hofer and Kris Kringle.
He broke out one bone, and he said, "This is one of the bones from the original Rudolph." You know, I use it to call the reindeer.
Lights, camera, Christmas, later today.
This American Life, just ahead at 10 o'clock here on KUAF.